Welcome in to episode 19 of This Week in Bitcoin. My name is Chris, and I'm back from my summer break just as the Bitcoin 2024 Nashville conference hype is heating up, and I had to be the guy that brought the cold water. Plus, the big banks have declared that the insidious KYC and AML process that we've all had to go through for years, well, they failed. And the data shows that they haven't led to any more arrests or stops of any kind of fraudulent activity or terrorism. But their solution to that failure is even worse. So we'll get into that. Also, take a quick look at the Ethereum ETF and why it seems to be no threat to Bitcoin, even though it's had a pretty good week, and a massive set of project updates that you won't want to miss. So let's start with the Bitcoin conference, which obviously I'm not at this year. Not really my cup of tea, I suppose. I think it's kind of just more of a spectacle these days. Not as much signal in there for me. It's a bit of a circus. I think, though, that it is kind of notable that every year they manage to bring in bigger and bigger names. And there is a space for that. So I don't mean to tear it down. I think that's actually great that we keep seeing these bigger and bigger names associate. But it's also a bit expensive, the Bitcoin conference in Nashville. If you want to get in on a standard ticket price, depending on your budget, you can spend around $700 to $4,000 for a basic ticket. If you want to get a whale pass and be a VIP, you're looking at $21,000. They'll take a bit off, though, if you pay in Bitcoin. And if you want to go meet Trump and contribute, I guess, I think this gets kicked back to Trump mostly. Get ready for this. Standard ticket price, if you want to get your picture taken and maybe stand next to him for a few seconds, $844,600. $844,600. So basically, you might as well just write that up to $845,000. But if you act fast, you could get it discounted at certain times at just a mere $60,000 to at least get a picture. But the big news that's got everybody talking, at least according to Dennis Porter on Weapon X, he says that the Trump team is set to make a, quote, historic announcement, and that labeling Bitcoin as a reserve asset is on Trump's to-do list, and he's going to announce it this Saturday at the Bitcoin conference.
Soon be in the political spotlight. Actually, this week, former president and current Republican nominee Donald Trump set to visit Music City on Saturday. He's going to be speaking at the country's largest Bitcoin conference. And as News 2's Adam Mintzer reports, the crypto industry is buzzing with excitement over what the former president may announce.
Former President Trump once called Bitcoin a scam in an interview, but now he'll be headlining the industry's biggest gathering.
And what you tend to find is some of Bitcoin's biggest proponents started out thinking it was a scam. And I think that that sort of healthy skepticism is good.
Brandon Green is running the group's 2024 conference in Nashville.
Maganomics!
He says his team has been in talks with the Republican nominee for a while, including conversations about what they see as good Bitcoin policy.
We saw the opportunity to reach out to the former president and talk to him about what Bitcoin is, why countries could be interested in it, why the U.S. specifically could be interested in a Bitcoin strategy. And those conversations were very positive.
And Green anticipates Trump's speech at the conference will make headlines.
No one knows what Trump is going to say except for Trump himself. However, you know, we're really optimistic that it's going to be a positive message that he delivers to the Bitcoin community. And in fact, we think it's going to be a historic message.
While no longer dominating headlines, Nashville CEO and conference attendee Eric Satz says Bitcoin is on the rise.
Bitcoin is not going away.
Lifted up by a recent move from the government that allows investors more access to Bitcoin.
So this conference always has a story like this that is too big to believe and then often doesn't deliver. I think maybe it was last year, the year before, it was last year. The rumor going into it was that Apple was going to integrate Bitcoin into the Apple wallet and that we would see, you know, an announcement. And I think maybe even like some sort of Bitcoin icon had got added to an iOS update. So it really led some momentum to that rumor. And then, of course, nothing happened. So I'm always very skeptical. But what I'm going to do is just keep my ear to the ground as the conference kicks off. And if Trump makes some news, I'll cover it for you. And depending, I suppose, on the significance of that news, I may even do a special episode. But we'll see. I don't yet know. I'm keeping an open mind, but I don't yet know if having politicians speak at events like this adds much signal. I think we'll have to wait and see. I believe, although I haven't double checked, but the last time I heard it was Saturday, the 27th of July is when he'll speak. So I'll let you know. You don't really even need to worry about it. I'll just keep my ear to the ground. All right, the Ethereum ETF launch is probably the other big story-ish, at least in the wider crypto space, and it does have a Bitcoin angle here. You know, there wasn't a huge hype cycle like there was for Bitcoin with a massive lead-up. In fact, Ethereum's price was fairly disappointing as we saw the news of the ETF, even once we knew the actual date. And on the day of, the price of Ethereum didn't do much. But we do have some day one numbers in the bag.
Spot Ethereum ETF set to begin trading today. The SEC approved ETF applications from 21 shares, Bitwise, BlackRock, Fidelity iShares, Benek and Franklin Templeton, along with Invesco Galaxy. And joining us right now to talk about all of this and what it means for the crypto industry and what is now, we'll describe as a milestone, another milestone. Anthony Pompliano is here, founder and CEO of Professional Capital Management.
Yes, it's Pomp. Yes, I know. It's been a while, right? I feel like, you know, it's been a couple of months, so we can hear one more Pomp clip. And he makes a good point.
Pomp, it's nice to see you.
Good to see you.
You think this is a game changer or not really? You seem less excited this morning than when you were here on Bitcoin Day.
Yeah. Well, let's go look at the Bitcoin ETF. I think, you know, historic thing, probably the best ETF launch in history. One of the interesting stats is that the BlackRock Bitcoin ETF has had more net flows than QQQ year to date. Right, so just massive flows there, over $500 million just yesterday alone. And so I think what a lot of people say is, well, that was the first one. Is the second one going to be as big? And I don't think that's true, right? If you just go and, you know, before I came on, I looked at all the major news sites. People aren't talking about it as much. And so like, the media attention, the hype, all that stuff isn't really there. And so it brings you to the question of, like, why are people not talking about it as much? And I think part of the challenge for Ethereum is that the story isn't as clear. It's very clear with Bitcoin, right? It's digital gold. When we start talking about Ethereum, we start talking about a technology platform. There's a lot more competition, et cetera.
I've brought this point up on the show before, is the ETH sales pitch is a little tougher. What exactly is the ETH sales pitch after all? Well, TradFi has been, that's the name for the banking system, traditional finance. TradFi has been honing their ETH pitch, trying to get this right. And this is BlackRock's, I guess, sales pitch for why you'd want to invest in Ethereum.
Ethereum is the second largest cryptocurrency by market cap after Bitcoin and has key characteristics that make it distinct. While many see Bitcoin's key appeal in its scarcity, many find Ethereum's appeal in its utility. Ethereum is a highly programmable blockchain that provides infrastructure for a diverse range of assets and use cases. You could think of Ethereum as a global platform for applications. This platform enables applications referred to as smart contracts to run without a centralized intermediary. Transactions on Ethereum require a transaction fee to be paid in the network's native token, Ether. Investor interest in Ether has been expanding as more people adopt digital assets.
So if you go by their analysis, it's the smart contract functionality. And I could see that for a bit, right? Especially as it's the only altcoin available as an ETF. And so you're going to have some investors that, well, I'm going to hedge or whatever they consider. I'm going to diversify and I'm going to get this crypto and this crypto via ETF, as if that's diversification. I think what you'll see is as the Solana ETF likely now gets approved, the technology and smart contract platform argument and sales pitch will also be used to describe Solana. Only Solana is cheaper. Solana is in the back pockets of the banking industry and the investors. So Solana seems to be a faster, cheaper technology run by their friends versus Ethereum, which is slower and expensive and perhaps not as great of a product. Now, that doesn't mean it won't do well initially. In fact, I think it pulled in total flows, this includes sales, about in and out, about $1 billion in flows.
What do we see and what are you expecting in the days ahead?
Yeah, so Frank, those brand new spot Ether ETFs made a big splash in their U.S. market debut, over $1 billion in trading volume on their first day, with nearly half of that traffic tied to Grayscale's Ethereum Trust. Now, we don't know yet whether that's money flowing into or out of those funds. We'll get better optics on net flows later.
A good portion of it was outflow, but I think, you know, their inflows were about 16% of the Bitcoin ETF inflow that day, something around there. I have some links in the show notes. But it doesn't seem to be a big threat to the Bitcoin ETF. The Bitcoin ETF is still doing very, very, very well. They continue to just boggle the mind. This is coming from Jerome Blockland. He's the founder of Blockland Smart Multi-Asset Fund. And he posted, the inflows into the new spot Bitcoin ETFs are baffling. BlackRock's iShares Bitcoin Trust has accumulated $19 billion in U.S. dollar inflows this year. This is more than Invesco's NASDAQ's 100 ETF. including the hyped Magnificent Seven stocks, during the artificial intelligence boom. In addition, he writes, Fidelity's spot Bitcoin ranks 11th, gathering $10 billion USD in inflows. From a flow perspective, Bitcoin is the world's second biggest asset class this year. That's pretty amazing, since Bitcoin size is 90 times smaller than that of equities. Just wrap your noodle around that. Well, there was a whopper of a statement made by a big association that represents the biggest banks in the world. They're suggesting that they need to monitor customer social media, your IP address, your device IDs, anything they can to identify who you are, to improve the currently, quote, ineffective AML practices and enhance monitoring for suspicious activity. So this is coming from the Wolfsburg Group. I'll have a link in the show notes. It's an association of Bank Ostrander, Bank of America, Barclays, Citigroup, Deutsche Bank, Goldman Sachs, HSBC, JP Morgan Chase, MFUG Bank, Standard Chartered Bank, and UBS. So they're all part of this association. And they issued a statement on the effective monitoring of suspicious activity, trying to improve AML and KYC standards because, in their report, they haven't been very effective. This is their language we're about to go through here. This is kind of remarkable. I'm going to go through some of this. It's pretty thick because, you know, it's like banking statement. So I got our buddy Brian to help us out to read through some of their statements just to kind of break it up a little bit. And according to the statement from the association, there's no value in AML and KYC as it lives today.
The group does not believe that the value being derived from the constantly increasing volume of suspicious activity reports is contributing proportionately to effective outcomes in the fight against financial crime.
That's right, Brian. Thank you. They propose something that needs more robust, true risk-based approach, their own words, that would yield higher value and quality outputs, and the need to focus on useful information, because the current approach doesn't seem to be doing that. And the only way they can really do that, of course, is more data.
While the current approach has resulted in substantial increases in the volumes of SAR and SDR filings, no reliable evidence shows a proportionate increase in highly useful information for relevant government agencies or a material reduction in money laundering and terrorism financing activities.
Their own words. That's their own words. All of this additional reporting they've been doing, all of this additional reporting hasn't increased catching terrorism, hasn't stopped money laundering. So what they need to do is tie it with social media usage, your IP addresses. That way they have higher valuable information to tie it all to.
The proposed approach would incorporate dynamic behavioral customer information, such as device IDs and IP addresses, as well as data from reputable external, publicly available sources, such as verified customer social media accounts. This would allow financial institutions to create a more comprehensive customer behavior analysis and a more efficient network-based contextual view of a customer. The group proposes using machine learning algorithms as booster models to augment a rules-based system, or in some cases, as the primary detection tool itself.
Yeah, just throw all your behavior through machine learning, and then they'll be able to get signals from that. I have a link to the report and the actual proposal PDF in the show notes. This is all the big banks coming together saying they want to do this. This only gets worse from here. And just imagine combining this with a CBDC in your country. The solution will never be to admit that the problem is unmanageable. The solution always will be, we must manage the problem harder. If this association admitted it was an impossible task, well, then they'd be kind of irrelevant, wouldn't they? So the findings will always be that they need more control, more information about what you're doing. That's always the way it's going to go. That's why you got to save in sats. You can do like I do. You know, if you buy them from KYC, dip them in liquid, move them to cold storage. You know, you really got to think about this system as it stands today. And if it only continues to get worse, how are you even going to be able to opt out at a certain point? Because the entire intention is to tighten down the controls and remove the exits. That's the whole intention. So you got to be thinking about it today. Speaking of KYC, Unicorn Lover 67 is selling sensitive information from Fractal, and it's 55,000 KYC'd IDs, including names, email addresses, phone numbers, physical address, crypto wallet address, scans of physical documents, also things in there like date of birth, if you took a picture of your license, anything like that. I don't know what the price is. I couldn't find the price, but that's being sold right now. And so even though I know KYC's, it's just, I get why they want to prevent money laundering and go after terrorism. But the bank's own association admits that these KYC and AML rules and laws and processes are not working at all, essentially. But yet I could come on here week after week and point to an example of how KYC has done harm, either by a tax authority abusing it, criminals discovering it and then going and physically harming people, or information and identity theft and leaks. I'm really torn on this. So I wanted to ask the audience, I thought, let's turn this around for a moment. Let's have the KYC conversation. Please do boost in. Are you totally anti-KYC, or have you just capitulated and given into the KYC process? Tell me why or why not. I have a lot of questions there. So boost in and tell me where you're at with KYC. All right. Let's move right along. There's much more to get to. Coming up next, your boost, big project updates, and a clip of the week that's just great. Help you sell Bitcoin to the normies who just don't get it. But first, I want to mention thebitcoincompany.com. You can use the promo code Jupiter and get a little extra sats back. This is a site that helps you easily and quickly convert sats into gift cards. They're on the Lightning Network, so you can zap your sats quick and cheap. When you use the promo code Jupiter, you'll get a $5 in-app credit once you've spent over $21 and a 1,000 sat bonus. We use that sat bonus balance to kind of pay for things like road trip gas when we go to meetups or if we're going to buy brewskis. It's usually just for fun things like that. And you can do it all inside the Bitcoin company's website, or you can send those sats to your own wallet. It's really slick. So if you got sats on Lightning and you want to spend them, you can convert them into gift cards quickly and get sats back at thebitcoincompany.com. Use the promo code Jupiter, and it supports the show too. All right. Thank you. Thebitcoincompany.com. Link in the show notes. And let's get into those boosts. PC Noel reference, that's a great one, came in with 4,321 sats. Thank you, sir. You're right. Set aside dumb greed and being liquidated, I've learned, I think. I've lost sats with Quadrigan, Quadra. Oh, man, I cannot remember the name now, but he says it's a risk with exchanges, so I never put them all in one place. I also don't buy just one ETF. For alts, I'm done with those. It's typically snake oil. I'm planning to sell the majority of them the next bull run. It's not worth it, and it's playing the lottery. Good luck, PC Nullref. I was just having this conversation with my son. The reality is they often don't pump again. Some of them do. But if you go look at the all-time price charts for most altcoins, they generally have one pump, maybe two, and almost never a third. So you kind of keep waiting for a bull run that never comes with those. That's the downside. But I do agree. You don't want to put all your sats in one basket, right? In that, right? Mm-hmm. Gene Bean's coming in hot with 4,270 sats.
Coming in hot with the boost.
He says, that was truly an unexpected turn in the promo trailer. I was playing that trailer about, like, the Bitcoin God trailer. He says, but I guess I should hold my judgment of the documentary until we see how the message is. Gene Bean, great point, and I think we're going to have more on that in just a little bit, so I'll save my commentary for that. Kara Matato comes in with 5,000 sats, a Jar Jar boost.
You're supposed.
I wouldn't say I've lost Bitcoins per se, but about 10 years ago, a popular takeaway platform started to accept Bitcoins as an experiment. As a computer scientist student back then, well, let's just say I spent an equivalent of 100 euros in Bitcoin back then for pizza. The pizzas were amazing, but I avoid thinking about how much those Bitcoins would be worth today if I had just kept them. Oh, Carol. Oh, man. Man, man, man. Yeah, that's the way you got to do it. I don't even try to think of how many Bitcoin I lost on Mt. Gox. And that was just one of a couple of online wallets that I lost multiple Bitcoin. One wallet, I think I probably lost somewhere between 30 and 50 Bitcoin. That one hurts. It hurts. You know, and then also all the gear in this studio, I probably spent it, you know, 100 years ago when Bitcoin was worth a lot less to buy this gear. Sometimes I wonder if I should have just gone cheaper and kept the Bitcoin, right? But the thing that people have a hard time remembering, or if you weren't around in the early days of Bitcoin, it's hard to appreciate. The culture wasn't around hodling. Hodl, hodl, hodl. You know, that was, the word hodl didn't even exist. It was all around using it for day-to-day transactions. This is what the whole blockchain war was about. No, it was block size. It was the block size war. It was all really about, should we be using Bitcoin as a PayPal alternative or a means of value, store of value? And the predominant narrative of the time was use it as a means of exchange. And it needs to be the next PayPal. And sites like, you could buy plane tickets through Expedia.com using Bitcoin. Ask me how I know. Newegg took Bitcoin directly to buy any hardware on Newegg. Ask me how I know. Well, any hardware that Newegg sold directly. More vendors took Bitcoin directly on chain, which just doesn't make sense today. It was never going to last. But more vendors took Bitcoin directly on chain back in the day than they do today. So it was a lot easier to spend your Bitcoin, actually. Sounds weird, but it's very true. I think we're getting back to that state now, and especially with things like the Bitcoin company, there's even more options, obviously, but you're going through a step change. Perhaps a more efficient one, but yeah. Chao Wing Wang comes in with Roa Ducks. Talking about Bitcoin documentaries, which do you recommend for people to watch or share with noobs? Great question, Chao. That's a great question. And I'm going to tell you the truth. I am not aware of a great Bitcoin documentary. Somebody out there listening knows of one, please boost it in. But I have two recommendations for you that I think are extremely important. They're not necessarily Bitcoin documentaries, but they'll give you an appreciation as to why Bitcoin has intrinsic value. And once you understand that fundamental concept, you'll understand what sets Bitcoin apart from any other, not just other crypto, any other asset in the world. So I'm going to link you two that you can get started with. I highly, highly recommend, it's on Lynn Alden's channel, How Money and Banking Work and Why They're Broken Today. Great documentary. And just to set you up, I'll play you just a tease of the intro of the documentary to kind of give you a flavor.
How Money and Banking Work and Why They're Broken Today. There are over 160 currencies in the world today, and the money supply from most of them increases rapidly, which persistently and invisibly dilutes people's savings and wages, and siphons that value away towards others. Money can be printed or lent into existence for corporate interests, bankers, or corrupt officials, and this purchasing power is taken away from the public in ways that are purposely more subtle and harder to detect than taxation. And as people try to reach outside of their regions for better money elsewhere, capital controls and other points of friction are often used to keep them in. Even in wealthy countries, all is not well. While inflation may not be as high, the money concentrates toward a smaller and smaller number of hands over time, and more debt is piled up on the government ledger. Political polarization grows, as nobody can agree on who is causing it or why it's happening. Improving technology should make things cheaper over time, but central banks' inflation mandates are to ensure that prices continually increase instead by continually expanding the amount of money in the system. Money affects us all. It's how we make contracts, how we coordinate economic activity, and how we store our purchasing power for the future. And while the world has improved in many ways, money itself continues to be broken for most people worldwide.
The other documentary I'm going to recommend is Principles for Dealing with a Changing World Order by Ray Dalio. It's not my absolute favorite, but I think it's worth a watch. But if you're only going to watch one, you definitely have to watch Lynn's. And please do, if you're listening right now, send in your Bitcoin documentaries. I think this is a medium we could do a lot better on to help people understand Bitcoin. Thank you, Chao, and let me know how it goes. Oppie1984 comes in with 4,000 sats.
This is the way.
Oh, yes, Oppie. Nice to hear from you. And he writes, all right, it's a sign. You and my coworker are both interested in Meshtastic. I guess I'll write a blog post with some basics and link to more info. As for the family radio thing, well, FRS, which does stand for Family Radio Service, is good. But if you want a little better range before you get your ham license, you could get a GMRS license. It's $35, no test required, and your family can share your license on the radio. And as a bonus, you'll have an FRN already set once you pass the ham test. Ah-ha-ha! Thank you, Oppie. I have heard, I think, of GMRS. I did not know that their $35 license would cover the whole family, though. That kind of changes the whole calculation for me. Thank you for that boost. I really appreciate it. Ready One Take Four comes in with 5,000 sats.
You're so boost.
Great show as always, he writes. Thank you, Ready. Nice to hear from you. Adversary 17 comes in with 15,000 sats.
I am programmed in multiple techniques.
He says, so regarding your family's thermostats getting automatically adjusted by you, I think if they knew it's you, they'd be okay with it. If someone else has access, they'd probably second guess and notice it more. Yeah, that's true. But in dabbling in altcoins, he says, I have owing crap coins for maybe a week or two. The first purchase of a cryptocurrency I had was on my Exodus wallet using the built-in FTX integration. Yeah. The old days. I bought $50 worth of alts, and then this podcast called Bitcoin Dad started, and I learned the error of my ways. Now, I am Bitcoin only. And then he just sent an extra 5,000 because he thought it was a high-value episode. Thank you, adversaries. You're one of our biggest supporters this episode. I really appreciate that. Paranoid Coder comes in with 3,000 sats. I've been listening to a variety of your shows since around 2012, and I'm staring at my Coder Radio robe right now. Nice. The Coder. My biggest Bitcoin regret is when I was mining with my dad in 2014. I was selling my profits to help pay my student loan. I was 21 at the time. Sadly, I still have that loan, and I distinctly remember mining about 10 to 15 Bitcoin a month. I sold it all near 250, which was a local bottom at the time. Live and learn. It probably wouldn't have been a good idea for a kid to make a million anyways. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I often think about the Bitcoin I spent just buying graphic cards to mine more Bitcoin back in the day. I also bought an ASIC, one of the very first consumer ASICs from Butterfly Labs. And you can actually go back an old Plan B podcast. You can still find them on YouTube and hear my journey of this Butterfly Labs ASIC getting delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed. And by the time it finally arrived, the difficulty had gone up because all the professional miners had gotten ASICs in the meantime. And my little crappy beginner ASIC was basically worthless after all that. I was so excited too. And that's kind of what got me out of mining, as I recall. So we all made mistakes, especially around the 2014 time, Paranoid Coder. I appreciate that boost. Mr. Pibb comes in with a row of ducks, 2,222 sats. Come on, Chris. Let's all go down the rabbit hole of ham radio.
Oh, man.
All right, I got to figure this out. Maybe I got to make like a limited time ham radio pod. And then once I'm doing it for a show, you know, I'll get it done. That's how the psychology works. All right, Mr. Pibb, you got me thinking about it. Damn it. Ace Ackerman comes in with a row of ducks, too. Follow-up to last week, altcoin usefulness in areas outside of money might include title to property in addition to government records, such as real estate and automobiles. Stock ownership is also likely to be tokenized. I totally agree, Ace. And, I mean, you hear Larry Fink talk about it every chance he can, and you see them getting all excited about RWAs, real-world assets. I talked about that before on the show. And to be honest with you, with the price of homes and real estate, you could really see people taking a crack at trying to do fractional real estate. It's not a totally new concept. But what if you could do fractional real estate in the Robinhood app and fractional real estate in the Cash app? And of course, what you're really doing, and this sounds so dark and twisted, is you're tokenizing the value of that real estate. Maybe it's a smart contract. I don't really know what this looks like, but I could see somebody trying this. And I just don't think you're doing that on Bitcoin. And I wouldn't want them to. I don't want the transaction fees going up for that shenanigans. So it's going to have to be somewhere. I mean, to me, it seems like it could be in a SQL database, to be honest with you. But it won't be, right? Because the whole reason the Salooner VCs are pumping Salooner and Vitalik and team are building ETH is because they believe, you know, it's somehow more trustworthy if it's some sort of quote-unquote semi-decentralized blockchain. But it seems to be the way it's going. You hear that about you. I covered that new stock exchange that BlackRock and team are opening up at the Texas exchange, and they're going to be all token. It's all tokenized. Well, what are they doing that on top of? Base? I don't know. Definitely not Bitcoin, though. I don't know. We shall see, I suppose. Jasper and Janney. Probably not right at all, comes in with 6,666 sats.
Everything's under control.
That documentary trailer you played should convince you that Bitcoiners are motivated not by empirical truths, but by basically, he's making the argument that it's faith-based. In their minds, the Fed plays the part of a snake, and a fiat currency is the apple that led to the fall. Bitcoin was the first of a public blockchain, but the fact that it remains the most primitive one doesn't sway Bitcoiners who describe their faith in their favorite digital token in religious terms. Bitcoin Jesus, anyone? Boy, this is a bad take. I really appreciate the boost, so I appreciate you getting us thinking about this. So it's a good boost, but it's a bad take. Do you know what I mean? Like, first of all, there is no Bitcoin Jesus because Satoshi disappeared. It's one of the most brilliant things that Satoshi did amongst many brilliant things. Every other blockchain does kind of have their Jesus, doesn't it? I mean, Vitalik and ETH. I don't know about Monero. You're probably a Monero guy, I'm guessing, right? I'm guessing. I've been noticing the Monero folks have been getting nasty. I've been noticing that. A lot of nasty notes from the Monero folks recently. I think they're getting really bitter about Bitcoin's success. And they like to throw this primitive one. So, when I see primitive too, that could be costs. That could be anybody that likes the smart contracts and the NFTs, they like to throw primitive at Bitcoin. And it's sort of like the most shallow argument possible because there's so many technologies today that demonstrate that a solid basic base layer that we can all trust and audit that is comprehensible and understandable is good. And then you can build on top of that. And we demonstrate that with this boost, don't we? That's just proof right here. But also to see encouraging developments like Fediment and other technologies that allow for experimenting just outside Bitcoin and then bringing it back to Bitcoin and using the security of the base layer. I think what you have to realize is that all technology kind of works this way. And this is how most successful technologies are built up, right? We don't call TCP/IP primitive simply because it doesn't inherently have the ability to host websites at the TCP/IP protocol level. That would be silly, but that's what your argument is here. As far as the religious connections, I think what they're trying to do is reach a new group of potential Bitcoiners, and they're trying to communicate to them with a value set that they understand. I don't know if it's cynical or if it's, motivated by their true beliefs, but I think it's kind of a brilliant move. It's not a message that necessarily connects with me, but I can recognize that it's a message that will connect with a group of people and a group of people that appreciate values of sound money. So I think it does make sense. And not every outreach to every new Bitcoiner has to be a message that rings true with me. But Jasper, like I said, don't like your take, but I do like your boost. Thank you very much for sending that in and getting me thinking. And if anybody else has thoughts or replies to that, please send those in as well. Dosifer comes in with 2,000 sats.
Coming in hot with the boost.
Great show, Chris. I would love to hear your strategy for holding Bitcoin on other viable coins, holding Bitcoin and other viable coins long term. Also, you say you don't keep them in exchange. Does that mean you advocate for keeping them in a wallet on a local machine? Finally, shout out to Wallet of Satoshi for enabling me to join the Lightning Network from Australia and boost my favorite podcast. Awesome! I'm glad to hear you got a system working for you. You know, when it comes to how you store sats, I think you got to be real. You got like life-changing wealth that you're going to want to hold generationally, and then you got like you're spending sats, just like you have a checking account and a savings account. And for me, the checking account, as long as I keep that to like, $100 or whatever might be in your local currency that's an important amount of money to you, I'm not as bothered if that is a custodial wallet or not on a service. In fact, often in Lightning, I think it makes things a little simpler. People don't like to hear this, but I've been a longtime believer that Lightning's really going to be a business network, just like SMTP has become. Yeah, sure, you can run your own email server, but it is a pain in the neck. It's doable, but it's a pain in the neck. It is now mostly the land of Gmails and Microsofts and large corporations. I think Lightning will be similar. Just first and foremost, you got to lock up liquidity just to get channels going. That's a barrier to entry for a lot of folks. And I think things like Fediments and Liquid are probably more appropriate for regular folk that don't want to manage channels. And in some of those cases, those are semi-custodial. And I think as long as it's not, again, a life-changing amount of money, I'm probably okay with that as well. When it comes to storing a large amount of Bitcoin as defined by you long-term, that's when I advocate for going offline. Companies go away. Things can happen. We've seen several examples of exchanges going out of business and seizing people's money. And you want to be able to hedge against that. And Bitcoin is one of the few assets that you can actually do this with. You can actually digitally move it under your jurisdiction. And so if you're not taking advantage of that with your long-term storage, you are sort of missing out on one of the greatest features of Bitcoin. But it needs to be whatever appropriate for you. I mean, maybe something like Unchained with a multisig. Unchained is a company that hosts your Bitcoin for you, and they do a multisig with you, so they can't spend it. But you're not responsible for its security. There's a lot of different gears here, and I don't think you should let other Bitcoiners tell you what's right for your Bitcoin. You will get burned sometimes if you do it wrong, but I do think that's part of the process. And we're fortunate to be early into Bitcoin, so when you burn yourself, you're not losing $1 million worth of sats. You know, there's something actually to that. Rotted Mood, thank you for the boost. I really appreciate it. Rotted Mood comes in with 10,000 sats.
You're doing a good job.
And just sends the old Vulcan hello. Thank you, Rotted. Appreciate that. Monty33 comes in with a row of ducks. Thanks for the informative show. I want to see if you could do a segment for those of us who came from other JB shows and don't necessarily have a lot of the base Bitcoin knowledge. I posted this on Matrix, and I was happy with your reply, but I figured I should put a boost behind the request. And also, P.S., this is my first boost ever. Hey-oh! Congratulations. That's great to see. Thanks for going and getting all set up. I see you're using Fountain. So Monty and a few others have requested kind of a more beginner basics. I don't really know what to cover there yet, but I have been brainstorming like an after the boost segment to cover the basics for maybe a week or two in a row. And I would really appreciate some suggestions as to what I should cover because, you know, having been around in Bitcoin for like 15-ish years, it's hard to remember what people don't grok at the beginning. And I could really use some tips, and I wouldn't mind putting something together there. Because I do really like the idea that some JB folks are catching the show and they're kind of getting interested. I think it'd be really great to help them get their feet underneath them. Lazy Locks comes in with 10,000 sats.
That's not possible. Nothing can do that.
Well, Lazy did it. Thank you. Says, thanks for the Bitcoin commentary and news. Thank you for the boost. And thank you, everybody. We had some below the 2,000 sat cutoff as well. They're in the dock, and I read them. We had 18 boosters. We stacked 79,240 sats. So not a banger, but I don't know. I kind of expected it because it was tighter show before our summer break. But also, I think one of the challenges that a new show is going to have is the boosts are going to be proportionate to the scale of news that week. And if it's a banger of a news week and there's just massive stuff that I have to break down and give you analysis on, you're probably going to boost more. And on the weeks that it's not like life-changing news, it's just standard news, I think maybe we're going to get less boosts, which kind of stinks because it's similar amounts of work regardless. I mean, there's probably more work on the really big news weeks. So I don't know exactly what I could do to smooth that out. So consider that when you're boosting, but also it's something I'm going to think about. I think it's really more of a problem for me to solve. So I'm going to give it thought, but thank you everybody who boosted it. 79,240 sats.
Fun will now commence.
Yeah, I'll take that fun. If you'd like to boost, you just need a new podcast app, podcastapps.com. Fountain FM is very popular, works great, integrates with Strike. Of course, you could also get Podverse, which is cross-platform. You could try out Castomatic, which works fantastic on iOS, and you can boost from the web. You can go to fountain.fm, search for This Week in Bitcoin, and just boost from the web. Let's get into the project updates. Proton, the folks behind Proton Mail and all of that, they've launched Proton Wallet. A non-custodial on-chain wallet. It rotates your public addresses every time you send or receive Bitcoin. And they have a feature in here called Bitcoin via email. They write, as long as both the sender and the recipient have a Proton wallet, you only need the recipient's email address to send them Bitcoin. This also means that if you are one of the millions of people who have Proton email, you can now automatically receive Bitcoin with your email address. They also have a feature in the app to buy Bitcoin securely in 150 countries, they write, and they are making the app open source and publicly auditable up on GitHub. There is no Lightning support yet. They write, Lightning is very difficult to do in a non-custodial way. That's according to what they told the Bitcoin magazine. Well, the good news is Albi Hub is out. And they aim to solve that very problem. So here's the pitch for Albi Hub. They write, it is an open source tool that enables users to run their own node and collect Bitcoin, or I'm sorry, connect to Bitcoin apps. It features one-click Lightning node installation, a self-custodial wallet, and an app store for seamless integration of social media and podcasting 2.0 apps, and external Lightning wallets via Nostr Wallet Connect. They're also offering something called paid Albi Hub Cloud. Users can opt for a paid Albi Hub Cloud plan at 21,000 sats per month. The plan provides a one-click installation option that includes live channel management and setup support, along with access to the Albi Buzz community. Albi Hub is also available as a free open-source DIY setup that can run on a personal server, desktop, or even a Raspberry Pi Zero. But I think the key takeaway here is they have a Lightning self-custody wallet that's just a few clicks, regardless if you're using something like maybe Mutiny as a backend or if you're using their paid service as a backend. You would use their paid service where you have to KYC, of course, but you get additional features like channel management. That seems pretty neat. I'll put a link to the announcement in the show notes. And then Fold is listing on the NASDAQ with 1,000 Bitcoin in their corporate treasury. Fold is a Bitcoin financial services company that offers like Bitcoin back, sats back kind of perks. So, you know, you use their debit card or their ACH-based bill payment system now, and you get some sats back on those transactions. Well, they're working with Emerald Acquisitions Corporation, and they've entered into an agreement to somehow enter into a SPAC together. I don't really understand how that part works, but between those two deals, now they're listed on the NASDAQ. They're going to have a new like a ticker. They have a weird ticker at the moment. That's kind of a big deal. And why is they propose that they are a Bitcoin financial services company that's creating a Bitcoin flywheel for investors. They call themselves an unstoppable Bitcoin accumulation machine for our customers and future shareholders. So the reason why I made this news is their value proposition to the market is that our various business functions produce sats. You know, like we do these things and we generate and buy sats. Our customers generate sats. We generate sats here. It's a sat producing machine. And as the value of Bitcoin goes up, the value of our company will go up. So you buy our shares on the presumption that Bitcoin goes up. In other words, it is a category of business that functions as a proxy to Bitcoin price exposure. And that's their core value prop to the market, is that you can indirectly buy Bitcoin and get exposure to Bitcoin price action by buying the stock of a Bitcoin financial services company. Now, I'm not so sure if Fold's going to be successful at this, but this as a concept could become a formula for a lot of different businesses. They write, we've stacked over 1,000 Bitcoin into our treasury, and we intend to stack thousands more. We're turning Fold into an unstoppable Bitcoin accumulation machine for our customers and future shareholders. Well, there you go. All right, it is time for our final clip of the week, and I like to track the messages and narratives that are going out to the Fox Business, CNBC, and Fox News, CNN demographic. I'm trying to say boomer in a non-negative way here. The folks that get their information from these outlets that honestly probably have some money to invest. And I don't think a better message could have gone out. Old Charles brought Natalie Brunell on, who's just great for this audience. And he starts with a chart, a touchscreen where he's circling the years that Bitcoin has performed better than every other asset. And it's like a 10-year chart, and he's just going crazy with this thing. And then he brings Natalie on. I tried to cut it down so it's nice and tight for you. But I just thought it was a great message and something you could perhaps share with friends who or family who are maybe not interested in the technology. They're not interested in the hedge against like the U.S. dollar, but they do like a good investment.
Another area where people are making a lot of money, you might have heard of it. Crypto? Bitcoin? Anyone? Why do people love Bitcoin? Why do they love crypto? Well, I got to tell you something. 28% of young folks say they want it, and I'll tell you why. Going back to 2013, the number one asset, the number one performing asset, Bitcoin, 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 Bitcoin. How much? How about 315,000%? 315,000%. There's one drawback. The years it wasn't number one, it was last. Still, though, 315,000%. I'll ride that wave anytime. Let's bring in now one of my favorite experts on the topic, Coin Stories podcast host, Natalie Burnett.
You know, the opportunity of our lifetime, especially for young people. We millennials have lived through multiple financial crises. My family lost everything in 08, 09. And we've seen the complete destruction of the value of these slips of paper that the government just prints out of thin air that we sacrifice our time and energy for. And our leaders are in their 70s and 80s, and we've watched them get mega rich, while our generation is posting social media videos about how they can't afford rent and groceries. So just to catch up economically has been chaotic for millennials and Gen Z.
Now, if you can put aside her bad audio, what we have here is an extremely refined message. She comes right in and attacks the core problems, and she gets into why Bitcoin solves that. The messaging is extremely tight.
And Bitcoin is really the bridge from chaos to hope, because young people are thinking about where they can put their money for the next 100 years and how they're going to save for their children and the next generation. So what are they going to buy, Charles? Bonds? No. Gentlemen and ladies of my era don't prefer bonds. A stock index? Well, that's basically tracking the inflation of the money supply, and you have a handful of companies making all the gains, so you're buying a few winners that offset hundreds of duds. And when you're picking stocks, how do you know that that company is going to be around for 100 years? What about real estate? Well, I can't buy a fraction of a house and take it with me around the globe. I can't buy a fraction of your watch, Charles. So for millennials and young people, Bitcoin is really the solution. It's the tool for economic empowerment, and it will eat into all the other asset classes that have made older generations so wealthy.
Natalie, I got less than a minute to go. The question everyone asked me, though, is how do you trust it?
The greatest thing about Bitcoin is you don't need to trust. You're relying on the currency of the universe, which is energy, and the laws of thermodynamics and math. It is the only form of money that we have that isn't a monopoly, that is decentralized, that is truly scarce, and that is global and completely voluntary for all of us to opt into so that we can create this parallel path for us and achieve the abundance and prosperity that I know we can achieve.
You know, Natalie, you can't get a fraction of the watch, but next time you're in New York, I'll let you borrow it. All right?
Okay.
All right, you look real cool with all the Bitcoin, folks, because you guys don't walk around with anything. You just got Bitcoin. Yeah? You know, sometimes you got to be a little flashy. You're great. People have made a lot of money listening to you. We'll talk to you again real soon.
He still doesn't get it, does he? No, Charles, we'd rather have the sats than the watch. In fact, if you've made it this far into the show, boost in and tell me, what is the perfect Bitcoiner car? My son is going to need a car soon. This is something I've been thinking about, is what is the perfect Bitcoiner car? Because you don't want to spend too much. You don't want to spend too little. I love to know how Bitcoiners think about these kinds of things. Now, for our song of the week, we got something kind of special. You know, this show is part of the podcasting 2.0 movement. I'm very excited by what's happening inside that project and how big it's growing and how influential it's growing. And one of the things that I think will change podcasting forever, and it's got a lot of energy behind it, is value for value music and the ability to include them into podcasts. Something podcasts could never do before is incorporate new music and give that value back to the artist. So this week I'm going to play the number one track in the value for value music space, and I'd love it if you boosted in and supported the author as the song's playing, because they're just fantastic. But that's it for this episode. Links will be at thisweekinbitcoin.show. Thank you so much for listening. Please consider sharing the show with somebody. And I will see you right back here next week. So I leave you with Cool Summer by Tony Solomon.
Shit. summer day. Sweet baby.